So like seen in the, what is it, Star Wars? Where they're awarding him the awards in the original Star Wars and putting it on.
Ceremony.
So hopefully I won't distract you guys from me out of the computer here. It's a crutch. And if I was looking distracted, it was because I was actually just figured out what I was going to talk about. But if I figured out, I mean, like, maybe the Lord gave it to me, so I don't know. I'm just joking. Gary's like, oh my gosh. he's been texting me, you know, for like a couple weeks, you know, like, hey, Dan, you know, I'd just love to see that testimony, you know? And like, of course, I'm trying to send these like messages like, oh, I got this, I'm done, you know, prepared, but I haven't even started, you know? So when you have a lot of kids, you have a lot of things like diapers, like Gary was talking about. You got a lot of dirty diapers, a lot of dishes. I mean, I could tell you about piles of dishes you've never seen, you know, with that many kids. Laundry, these kinds of things. But what I don't have a lot of is time. I don't have a lot of time or margin in my life. And God's been increasingly making me more okay with that. So that being said, you know, when Gary had asked me if I'd come up here and share my testimony with you, I was tickled about it. And I realize it's not because he believes that I have anything edifying to say, but because he knows that I need a break from my family and I wouldn't be able to get up here unless I was sharing. So, no, I'm just joking. You guys are a really tough audience, so like, at least give me some courtesy laughs, you know? Or maybe you're not laughing because jokes are only funny when they're far from the truth, right? So, the being able to have a chance to come and interact with you guys has been like a profoundly encouraging thing for me, because a lot of times I feel pretty isolated and in my world, certainly when it comes to fellowship and things like this. And so being able to come up to Mo Ranch, or I've come here once before, it's just been a really good thing. And in saying that, I also think, like, most of you guys have met me and know a little bit about my story. And for those of you that don't know me or haven't met me, you may have been thinking kind of like what Gary was thinking about, seeing, you know, hearing, okay, he's got seven kids, or, you know, we're expecting our eighth, you know. And you're probably thinking one of two things, you know. One, you're going to come up to me afterwards and say something like that you think's novel. Like, you know what causes that, right? You know, like, I haven't heard that one before, right? Or that's group A. Group B is the one that's going to maybe thinking to themselves something kind of like what Gary said, which is, it makes me sad to even hear it, but to think you say something like, well, I don't know how he manages, you know? Like, I have two, you know? I'm looking around seeing a lot of older guys that have already probably been there, done that, raised their children. But for those of you that don't, you might be feeling overwhelmed with your two, but I was overwhelmed when I had two. I was overwhelmed when I had three. I was overwhelmed when I had four, five, six, seven. I was overwhelmed. I'm still overwhelmed. And so I would probably question the premise of your question before you even ask it, the question of how do I manage. And the premise is that I manage. You know, best case scenario, God manages. You know, worst case scenario, I attempt to manage, and it's a freaking soup sandwich. So you guys, it's a military term, but think about like two pieces of Wonder Bread and like some hot tomato soup, like trying to make a sandwich out of that and like eat it, you know? Like it's a mess, you know? It's a mess. And I will be the first person to tell anyone that my life, it's a mess. It's a mess. But like, by the grace of God, I'm here, and the only thing I'm managing is expectations, you know? You know, I'm trying to do that right now, you know? But I'll tell you, my expectations are really low. I mean, Gary's expectations were met, you know, when I came in at 8:30 p.m. tonight, or last night, you know, like late and like disrupted your group. You know, my expectations were met because I actually had pants on, you know? And my wife's expectations, she's a badass, guys. I'm just going to tell you right now, you know, we'll talk more about her in my testimony, but her expectations were met without knowing it because I had my fly zipped up while I was talking, you know? So, all right. So I just ate up like five of my 20 minutes for my testimony. But honestly, you know, I think back like growing up, and like I was talking to last night, I was talking with Gary about this, about like telling your kids, you know, stories, you know, and I, because I don't have a lot of time, and I'm such a driven, kind of focused person, the way the Lord's hardwired me, or maybe my flesh, or I don't know. But because of that, I tend to be focused on whatever mission, you know, that I'm on, you know, whether it's walking to the shower. You know, people think, like, you know, Stephanie used to say, I walk like I'm in, like, this is so politically incorrect, but like a gay pride parade, you know, like I'm just swinging my arms really big, you know, and stuff. But people think, like, this is an intense guy, you know, he's always on a mission. But the problem is, like, my mission, you know, a lot of times is misguided. And I'm sitting talking with my kids and realizing, you know, as we're washing dishes together, doing stuff, like, this is the mission. Like, right now, like, that's the epiphany that God's giving me, is that, like, life isn't about the big things, about going to war, about these things. It's about everything that happens in between. And, like, there's so many lives that are just lost in the monotony of life. And that's what he's called me to right now. And so, you know, I was talking with Gary about this and telling your kids stories and how important that is, about the wonderful things that he's done, you know, throughout his life, or throughout my life. I just seen, since as long as I can remember, I remember God's hand just being on me. I can think back at these different times in my life, and I kind of think of my life as a series of battles. And each of these battles, you know, like, I look back now, I didn't know it at the time, but the Lord was always with me, you know. And so when I think back, like, you know, to probably why I tell stories, you know, my dad used to tell me stories a lot. You know, he said when I was a kid, he said that one story he told was when he was in college, he was a devout atheist, and he really got a lot of joy from just eviscerating Christians, intellectually eviscerating, you know. And so he was on the college campus in Missouri, you know, selling pot out of his trunk or whatever, you know. And he would just eviscerate Christians until I met your mother. You know, she was the best apologist that I had ever met, you know, that I have ever met. And it's kind of cool to think about that. You know, it worked, because they ended up getting married. You know, he came to a saving knowledge of Christ. He had what I think Dave, or at least Kevin says Dave, would call a natural birth, you know. But based on her, maybe through, or God, removing some obstacles, you know, and that was really it. But that obviously had a massive influence on my life, in the sense that, you know, that's why maybe I was born into a Christian home, or why, you know, I don't know. I've always wondered that, you know. And I've also thought about the fact how gracious it was of God. You know, she died when I was 4.5 years old. So, and she died of a disease she had had her whole life. And it's my understanding that my mom was like a wonderful Christian woman, and I just think about how gracious God was to give me 4.5 years. You know, Kevin told me one time, trying to encourage me to invest in my little kids, you know, and what Gary was joking about, you know, as far as us, our last lackadaisical, you know, maybe that's peace, or maybe it's just us not being good. Maybe you should have jumped in and helped his parent. But I mean, that being said, you know, Kevin told me, he said, you know, Dan, the first, I've heard it said, that if you give, you know, a guy said, hey, give me your kid for 5 years, the first 5 years of his life, and then I'll give him back to you. And you can do anything you want after that, and it won't matter, because his character will be set. And so I think about how gracious God was, you know, when he took my mom away, to do it after 4.5 years of her porn. I don't have a single memory of her, probably just the way our minds work, but, like, it's in my character. But I think that's the first battle that was fought, and that battle was for my emotions. And I don't know if I lost or won, but, like, I'm pretty sure that was the beginning of my emotions kind of, you know, leaving. And so I've always been, like, a rational, cognitive kind of person, a thinker and stuff. And, you know, my wife would say I struggle with empathy. I would say that's an understatement, you know. So and that's not a good thing. I'm not bragging. I'm laughing, but it's not funny, you know. And so, you know, this the first thing I think that died was, you know, in the scarring that is, you know, our lives, is, you know, my emotions. And so, that being said, I've always been a driven person. I just kind of lacked the mission. And so when I was in school, I thought, like, the only thing to life was just having fun, you know. And so as I had a lot of fun. I got more and more into high school and older and stuff, and the fun got a little more troublesome. I ended up going to a Christian reform school in Northern Ontario, like a remote part of Northern Ontario. So saying, like, a remote part of Northern Ontario, that's, like, really friggin' remote. Okay? And so, and there was these big bearded guys that clearly scarred me, because I have a big beard now. But they, you know, it was like intercession type stuff, and God really used it. Ironically, there's like a documentary about this place. They shut it down like 10, 15 years ago, and everybody's bitching and moaning about how, oh, they hurt my feelings or whatever, you know, and like, yeah, I mean, they hurt my feelings too, you know, probably didn't help my whole lack of emotions thing, but the reality is God used that in my life powerfully, and particularly a relation of one of these men that God systematically been gracious enough to put in my life, you know, and it changed me. I began this kind of Godward orientation. Gary said, Kevin's my spiritual father, and I didn't even know what that was. I thought you guys were a bunch of quacks for saying it, like, you know, when I first came here, you know, I'm like, geez, it's like kind of like a cult, you know, but now I know what it means, and you guys might have interpreted that as like Kevin led me to Christ or said some prayer of salvation, but the reality is I've been praying this prayer of salvation since I can remember. I never thought it took, you know, I was just constantly praying it. You know, my dad was a strong Christian in the way that I knew a strong Christian to be. And so I was exposed to Scripture all growing up throughout my life, and it gave me a better understanding of you know, maybe who God is, you know, things about God and stuff. And that's always shaped me, and it's given me a confidence, you know. And I think that helped me, because when I finally was in high school and I was sitting there, it was like 9/11 had just happened. I'll never forget it, because I came in that morning to my economics class, and there was like a screen up, and I was a senior in high school, and I was just searching for like a mission. I just didn't know I was yet. And then I saw the buildings fall, and we're all just kind of sitting there looking at the screen, and like it just crystallized in my mind. It was like that's my mission. Like this matters, because all I wanted to do was something that matters, you know. And I thought, being a warrior, you know, that's something that matters. And so I did a bunch of research, which is probably a foreshadowing of the fact that I'm really a geek, not a soldier. And so I did a bunch of research, and I found out, okay, I'm not just going to go in the Army. I'm going to go into the 82nd Airborne Division, and I'm going to be an Airborne Ranger. And if you know the Army, you'd think, well, that's kind of, well, I mean, yeah, there's Rangers in this. But I actually knew that if I went in on a RIP contract to Ranger School, the statistical probability was lower that I would actually get tapped. But if I go to the 82nd, they actually gave away more slots to Ranger School. I mean, is this geeky? Yeah? You smell what I'm stepping in? This is who I am. And so, like, I knew that the highest probability chance of going and being successful at Ranger School was going into the 82nd Airborne. So I got that in my contract. You know, my friends are like, what'd you get for a bonus, you know? And they're like, I got 20 grand. I was like, I got 5 grand, but I got the 82nd Airborne. They're like, well, you're an idiot, man. The recruiters beloved me, you know? You dumbass, you know? And so when I find myself on a plane after graduating, flying, you know, I mean, literally, basic training was like, I mean, it was like pouring gasoline on fire, in the sense that I had this burn and desire and stuff. And then all of a sudden, I'm getting indoctrinated into like, this is how you do the mission, you know? And man, I'm ready. Like, I don't know where the mission is, but like, I'm ready to do the mission, you know? People always like thank me for my service, and I feel really guilty because I'm thinking it was like a video game for me. You know, like I it's not that I didn't love my country or want to serve my country, but like, man, I was like, I just wanted to fight, you know? And like, you know, I feel like the guy in the back of the room, like, you need somebody to go over there overseas and kick some ass? Like, I want to do that. In fact, I'll kick your ass first, you know, or whatever. You know, it's just who I was. And like, I think back and like on it, and it's just bizarre to me. But so I find myself heavily inoculated on a plane, you know, to the Middle East, maybe two months after basic training. And Afghanistan was already a thing. Iraq was not a thing, but when I was in basic training, but it became a thing. And so they invaded Iraq around the time that I was starting basic training. So by the time I was end of basic training, I was actually going to catch up with my unit who had pushed all the way to Baghdad. So like, long story short, it's going to be hard to keep my time hacked, but I'm going to do my best. So long story short, I immediately felt like this peace that nobody else around me I could tell had. You know, we were all kind of, you know, there was things that I saw, you know. I mean, the first maybe month that I was in country, I was a first responder to an IED blast. I remember walking into this perimeter that the guys had set up around to secure it, and it was almost like it was surreal, because I told you my emotions were the first battle, you know, that I was in, and I just didn't feel like they. I mean, I see this guy, and he's like rolled up in a tarp. I'll never forget it. You know, it's like I thought it was a body. I mean, it looked like it, but it wasn't big enough. And it was almost like surreal, you know, to see these kids like the whole insecurity facing out and stuff, and these looks on their face of like anger or whatever. And like I just didn't feel anything, you know. But it was particularly like shocking to me to get to the center of this perimeter, and there's this great big, you know, E7, so we call him a sergeant first class. And he had this massive dip in, you know, and he's like kind of shaking. And I was with the sergeant major, and so I'm standing next to the sergeant major and like, you know, pulling security. I'm like the lowest ranking guy by far. And the sergeant major puts his hands on the body of the guy in the tarp, and he had just walked up, and he said, "Who's this?" And this big, huge, concrete-eaten E7, you know, that I'd seen before, like he just scares you just looking at him. He starts shaking. He goes, "Private, Private," and he couldn't say the guy's name, you know, because it was a kid, and like he's dead now. And I remember like I should be feeling some emotion here, like, you know, I couldn't, but I wasn't. I didn't feel anything, nothing, you know. I mean, I thought this is important, and I'm glad I'm here, but like I didn't feel anything, you know. I mean, that's disturbing for me, you know. And so, I mean, in retrospect, at the time, I guess it's just kind of surreal. But like, I get on the plane, you know, come back home. I'd gone to Iraq 4 times. So my second time, I was in a Ranger reconnaissance unit as a sniper, and I had just been studying all this doctrine and like, this is how you do this. And when you go up with a team, you know, you can't silhouette on the roof, and you got to recess off the window this far, and you got to do all these different things. And so I knew all these things, and like, you know, we go out at nighttime. We probably went on 100 sniper missions my second tour in Iraq. And I was out like, you know, every night. And I'd get back from my missions, and it'd be like the sun would be coming up. You know, we'd go out at nighttime. And like, I'd drink like, you know, a couple swigs of like Dayquil, you know. And then I'd like just pass out in like this hammock. Like we were in this castle that we had kind of taken over. And I'd just sleep, you know, until, you know, the line infantry guys really hated us. You know, because they're like, these guys just sleep all day. It's like, well, we're out at nighttime, you know. They're out walking around with all this, like, heavy gear on during the day. Like, it's, like, sweating and stuff. And they're like, those scouts, man, they're sleeping, you know. And, like, and you know, we have, like, you know, like a beard. And, like, you know, we're, like, and so they just hated us. But we really did go out every night, you know. And so I come back at night, fall asleep. And I remember this one night we were at this barn that we had taken over. And there was a burn barrel out there. And I looked up to these men, and I started to realize around that time that, like, what I had always wanted was, I guess, to be a warrior, but maybe at a deeper level, it was to be the best, right? I just want to be the best. Like, whatever that is, I want to be the best, you know? And so, like, I started to realize I'm not the best at this. You know, what I lacked in my aptitude, and I, trust me, I lack aptitude as a soldier, you know? I can't even find my way out of a Walmart parking lot. You know, my wife's like, I'm like driving around circling, you know, and she's like, damn, the exit's over here. And I'm like, oh, freaking crap, you know, how do you know that, you know? And so like, but they had me on point for our team because I was a senior scout observer. And so I'd like walk point, and I'd stay up at nighttime, guys, and I'd study. You know, I was up till 1 a.m. last night. I was up 6 a.m. this morning. I mean, I can sleep when I'm dead, right? You know, again, just kind of a joke. But so I'm like, I'm studying these satellite images at nighttime, you know, and I'm thinking to myself as I'm looking at them, like, I got to remember these streets because I don't even know how to get around. So, but every night we'd go out, and again, you know, God was taking care of me, but I felt like all the burden was on me, and I was just trying so hard, you know, to like be what I was supposed to be and do these things. Well, back to the burn barrel, sitting out there, you know, talking one night, and everybody had kind of left except for, you know, Zach, who was not my team leader. A recon team's 5 guys. Team leader's like an E6, so it's like a squad leader in an infantry line company. It's similar. So, like, the other team leader, guy I looked up to, you know, he's Ranger tabbed and all this stuff, you know, and he's sitting there, and everybody else had left. Well, I'd read my Bible, right? So like, not like at the burn barrel, I mean, that's kind of weird, you know, but like, I'd read my Bible in the morning or whatever, and I could tell he'd like kind of look at me when I was doing it, you know? And so he said, hey, you know, Dan, we kind of pride ourselves in this unit of saying each other's first names, like it's better than other soldiers because we're like on a first name basis, you know? It's like you're military, but you're not. It's pretty lame. But he's like, hey, Dan, you know, you read your Bible, you know? And I'm like, yeah. Yeah, I didn't know where he was going with this. And he said, yeah, I used to. So he comes out that, you know, he used to be a Christian, and then his marriage fell apart, and his wife would, you know, see him reading his Bible, and she'd scream at him like, you know, like, you're so pathetic and all this kind of stuff. And so he just gave up on God and everything. And I don't know what he was trying to do. He's like getting all this out, you know, and telling me this. It was like he felt guilty because I knew he was a womanizer. They're all womanizers, you know. And so I knew he was all these things. He's a great leader, though. And so we were talking that night, and I could tell he wasn't there, man. Like he wasn't there, like ready to make a change in his relationship with God or whatever. But he had all this scarring and stuff from life. So maybe like 3 weeks later, we were out on a mission. There was like multiple hide sites along this road. And that was in our business, you know, we were killing people, you know. So like people come up to set up a bomb and, you know, they try to blow them up with these little devices where you go through with the vehicle and blow it up and stuff. But the best way to do it is just, you just kill the people that are setting them up. It's not rocket science, right? And so we had these multiple hide sites set up along this road. Well, Zach's team was down the road and we had heard some gunfire and stuff. I didn't know anything. And so afterwards, I'm sitting in this room, and Josh, my team leader, comes in, Zach's best friend. They kind of grew up together. And he said, guys, Zach's dead. And he said, and like everybody's like quiet, like, oh my gosh, it wasn't subtle. You know what I mean? I make it sound like death was like all around us. I mean, not all around us, but I mean, it happens, you know? But not like, not to Zach, you know? And so like I'm listening, and he said, if you want to know what to do, you know, I don't know. You know, because he's my best friend. And like he left, and I'm just sitting there, and I'm like, oh my gosh. And then after that, you know, we went and we like saw his body. They had him in a meat truck, and they unzipped the bag, and, you know, we got to look at him. It didn't really look right. You know, he looks like Zach, but not really like Zach, because his spirit was gone, you know? And so, like, I remember I started to feel like this this matters. Like, this matters. Like, I was talking to this guy about Christ. You know, and like everybody's talking about, oh yeah, but Zach's going to pass the keg in heaven and all this kind of stuff. It's like, no, he's not. You know, it's not going to pass you the keg in heaven. You know, that's not how it works, you know, but they're just lost, you know. And so anyhow, fast forward, because I've got to, you know, a couple more tours in Iraq. I started to realize, man, I really like the idea of being a warrior a lot better than I like actually being a warrior. And so, like, I want to be the best, but like, this isn't my gifting, and like, I'm not sure I like this, you know? And so, but I wasn't scared, you know, because when I was in the Army, is like, I had like 225 years of Army doctrine that I'd studied, and I was like, just show me the manual, I'll read it, I'll understand it, I'll do it. And like, when I was walking on the streets of Mosul, man, I was cool as a cucumber. I mean, I just like, because like, I knew what to do. And it wasn't like I didn't know that there was like some guy maybe over here that I didn't see that was going to like shoot me in the face. But like, at least I got shot in the face, and then I'm like in heaven. And I understood how that worked too. Like, I got it. Like, you know the Lord is my Savior. And like, you know, I mean, I was fit for heaven, right? You know, and so, you know, what I didn't realize was that I wasn't fit for this earth, you know? And so I left the Army, and I started on my next mission. But this time, my beautiful bride, to be at that point, but quickly became my bride, she didn't know that she was about to fall in tow behind a guy who had no idea what the hell he's doing. You know what I mean? Like, I just, like, I'm looking for the next battle or whatever, and I was driven, I was focused, but like, I didn't have anybody guiding me, you know? And so I got out of the Army, and I'm, you know, reading my Bible, and I'm heavily involved with the Navigators and the Navigator Ministry. It was on the air. I was listening to, Walt Hendrickson was later, but I was heavily involved with the Navigator Ministry, and I memorizing scriptures and verses and things, and like, you know, and I think back, like I felt like almost like when I was a child and I had prayed the salvation prayer over and over and over again, you know, but it never really took. I felt like it was all a sham, like, you know, like there was no substance to like the things that I believed. But I mean, I believed them deeply, but I was taught that like, it's basically like a wager, right? Like you got a hand, you're playing in cards, and like, you know, I only got one hand to play in this life. And so it doesn't really matter if my cards are winning cards or not, because I'm freaking playing them, you know? And I'm going to play them with some intensity because that's all I got, right? And so I didn't know that there was something more to that. Again, I knew a lot about God, but I didn't know God, you know? And so that's why I would say that Kevin was my spiritual father, because, you know, he had actually, I was sharing a testimony that at a men's deal in Colorado Springs, and like there was a recording of that in some archive. Kevin was looking for a speaker and for a deal that he was doing in San Francisco, like a prayer breakfast for men, businessmen or something. And so he had the speaker lined up, and like 5 months out, the guy bails. And so, you know, that guy was a legit speaker, you know, not like me. Like, I'm a freaking idiot. And so, like, but my speech was archived in this database that was behind some other guy that would have been a legitimate candidate. And so Kevin's, like, looking through the database for the, because it says, hey, listen to this guy, not me, this other guy. And he gets done with the testimony, and then it rolls over onto mine. And so he starts listening to my obscure testimony that I did up in Colorado Springs. And he thought, for whatever reason, ah, this war stuff is interesting, you know. And so, this is good. And so he calls me up, and it was really weird. I get this call from the Bay Area, and I'm, like, from Texas, you know, and I'm kind of conservative and things, you know. And so I'm like, who's this guy from the Bay Area? Like, he must be gay, you know. And so you know, he's like, I know some people that you know, and da-da-da-da. And I'm like, yeah, right, man. I don't know anybody you know. This is weird. But I kind of suspected. I mean, the guy sounds like he's legit, so I'll just check it out. So I did some research on him, called him back. Okay, so you're legit. You know who Walt is. I know who Walt is. And, you know, we're good to go. And so I go out there and to do my testimony, but I missed a major part of that. The 5 months leading up to that, he said, Dan, I've kind of had this gift of being able to help people cultivate their testimony. I'm like, what does that mean? Like, you know, like help me lie about what happened? I mean, it's the facts, dude. And he's like, no. I mean, like, I don't know, Dan, you know, like you, at the end of your testimony, you just said the war stuff's great, you know, like, yeah, you shoot people and blah, blah, blah. You know, I'm like, I like this guy, you know, and he's like, you know, but then, you know, you say at the end about you struggle with anxiety a little bit, you know, or whatever. You got that one licked? And I was like, no, I don't. And he said, well, I want to talk to you about that, you know, because you hook a guy in with the stories about war and stuff because it's sexy and glamorous and stuff, but they can't relate to you. You know, but you start talking about your struggle with anxiety. I'm sure the struggle that you tell me about when I ask you, you know, that's where people can really associate with you, you know. How's God helping you with that? And so little did I know that we would start meeting together, you know, every couple of weeks to go over my testimony. And then when I came and shared it in front of all these people and stuff afterwards, I was like, you know, really sad because I'm like, I want to meet with Kevin again. And like, I don't have any reason to anymore. And so I asked him, hey, would you be willing to continue to meet with me? I was like about to cry. You know, I didn't even know. I mean, I'm feeling some emotion now, you know, it's kind of weird. Like the Holy Spirit, it's a weird thing, dude, the Holy Spirit. And so he said, I don't know, I think about it, Dan. And I'm like, you think about it, you know? Like God has always put these men in my life and like they always like sought me out, you know, like, hey, like Dan, he's kind of funny. You know, I think maybe God's working with this guy, so I'm going to spend some time on him. And I thank God for that. But like with Kevin, it's a little bit different because like definitely Kevin reached out about the thing. But then I asked him, he said, I'll think about it. Well, we come meet the next couple weeks later. And I said, at the end of the conversation, I said, well, did you think about it? You know, like, did you think about the thing? And he said, yeah, Dan, if you want to know about how to be disciplined and how to read your Bible and memorize more scripture and all this different stuff, I'm not your guy. I'm not your guy. I have no interest in that. I don't have time for that. And I knew he's a successful businessman and all this stuff. And so I said, okay. And he said, but if you want to learn more about this whole walking in the Spirit thing, you know, yeah, I'm interested in that. And I was like, thank God, because that's all I'm interested in. Because this other stuff, it doesn't work. Like I'm dying here. You know, I'm driven, I'm focused and everything, but I'm dying here. So what I didn't tell you is I had gone all the way through the Army, went out, went to college, straight A's in college. I was a C-minus student before, but then I was driven, you know. And then I'm like talking to my wife one evening, and I'm like, I really like this finance and stuff. And she said, you know, but you got to get a master's degree. And she said, well, why don't you go to grad school? And I was like, oh, okay. So I just went to grad school. We moved to Boston and went to grad school. And I'm in grad school, and I'm sitting in the back of a classroom one day, and all of a sudden something popped. And like I felt like the room was spinning, you know? And so I stood up and like, you know, the professor's talking and all these little rich kids around me. It's like this really expensive school. And like, I like kind of stumble out of the classroom and I'm like, yeah, about to, you know, I caught one in the face, you know? I guess for students that means having a heart attack, you know? And so like I walk outside, my wrist's hurting and stuff, and I sit down on the desk, you know? And I mean, I had been staying up late studying and drinking coffee and all this kind of stuff, you know? So I thought I'm having a heart attack, you know? Rock and roll, here I come, you know? And so I'm sitting there. I'm really not. I'm freaking out, right? And so I get to the hospital. Long story short, the doctor's like, yeah, you're having a panic attack. It's anxiety. And I'm like, this guy doesn't know who I am, you know? No, this is like physiological, you know? This is in my body and stuff, you know? And he's like, no, it was this older doctor. All the other ones had tested me and they were freaking out. And she walked in like civilian clothes and she's like, take all this stuff off. His wife's freaking pregnant. Get him home. He's having a panic attack. And I was like, no. You don't listen to the other doctor. She's like, trust me. I know what I'm doing. You need to go home, you know, and get your shit under control. And I'm like, I kind of like her for that, you know. And so I went home and I'm like, the next battle was my mind. And it was like I had learned when I was in the Army that I could push myself, you know, probably 10 times further than most people believe is possible. You know, and so it gave me this edge to even further be driven. But what God taught me was, Dan, I'll just unravel your mind. You think it's all mind over matter. If you don't mind, then it doesn't matter, is what they said in the military, right? And God's like, well, then I'll just unravel your mind. And so here I am like a broken guy, no emotions, a broken mind, you know. And then I'm fast forward now, you kind of understand. So I meet Kevin, you know, and he's telling me all this stuff about walking in the Spirit and stuff. And one day I remember he told me, he said, Dan, you still just don't get it, do you, you know? And I'm like, because he'd just say things so simply, like, have you prayed about that? Or have you done this and stuff? And I wish I could have some part of my testimony where I talk about the walking in the Spirit, but I can't describe it. It's just something that, like, it either is or it isn't, but I just know it's a lot of Christ and not a lot of me. And so the third battle I fought was for my family. You know, I watched as my wife, who I had drug along with me on this mission that I was on aimlessly, she just broken, you know, and a lot of it is my fault. You know, I remember I'd be screaming at her and I'd say, I'd rather, because she wanted me to do something probably pretty reasonable. I'd rather die than do that. You know, I'd rather die than do this. And I meant it, you know, it damaged her. And I felt so bad about the things that I had done. And then fast forward, her family starts to fall apart. You know, that was what Gary was talking about. This is only a couple years ago. And like I had just started learning from Kevin what it meant to walk in the Spirit, and it was like I had this crazy battle that like fermented these things in my mind. And like I remember sitting with my wife at the table. I'm probably way over on time. How am I doing on time? I'm over, huh? Okay. So I'm sitting with my wife. About 5 minutes, I'll wrap up. I'm sitting with my wife at the table, and we're talking. And all this horrid stuff, I'm not going to go into the details, was going on. But it's really bad. We lost our home, you know, and she grew up in a broken family, and home was a big deal. And I worked so hard to give her this home. God had blessed my business, and I stretched, and we bought this property. And we're having this horrible situation with our neighbors. It's bizarre. And so we ended up having to like flee from our home. Meanwhile, you know, she had learned Christianity. Notice my phrases. From her parents, and so it wasn't really hers, but she didn't know that. And all she knew was that her parents were divorcing after 35 years or something of marriage, you know. And it was just totally disrupting her view of God. I mean, everything. And it's like a perfect storm. And I remember sitting there one day, and I have this analytical mind. And so I looked and I said, God, I said, show me what, like, WTF, you know, like, show me what's going on. And like, I'm not questioning him. I read Job. I know how that stuff goes. And you know, I just want to know, like, tell me what's going on. And so I started drawing this picture. And my wife was in the center, and there was all these different things around her. And then I started putting X's on all the things that had just been demolished. Like everything, like her family, her ideas, her beliefs. And like, there was this like one circle to the right. And it had my name on it, Dan. And that was the only thing left. And I said, okay, God, you're going to take me out now. I mean, I see how this pattern works. You know, you take out all the other stuff in her life, and, you know, maybe she's not giving in to you or whatever. I don't know. But now you're going to take me out. And, like, I'm okay with that. But, like, don't do this to my children, you know, because I lost my mom when I was 4 and a half. And I had, you know, like, you know, 6 kids that are all, like, looking to me. And, like, and I sat down with her, that was a moment, but I realized, you know, I didn't know what it meant. I didn't think, I'd started to know enough about God to know that that's where, wasn't where he was going, you know? Like I suspected that. I could like actually hear Kevin saying, well, that's not how it works, Dan. You know? Because, I mean, I came to Kevin and I said, but, I mean, she's basically just said to me, Kevin, you know, if God does exist, Dan, then he's an asshat. That's what I think about God right now. And I'm like, oh my gosh, she just said that. You know, I told Kevin, you know, thinking he's going to freak out, right? And he said, like, oh, she's just telling you how it is, or how she feels, you know? And I was like, what do you mean? And he said, you know, Dan, she doesn't know God. You know, she knows about him, but she doesn't know him, you know? And he said, you got to wrap your mind around the fact that, like, the only Jesus that she's ever going to see is you. That's it. Right now, that's all she's got. That's what the picture means. Because Jesus manifests his deity through our humanity. And so you need to get past yourself and realize that, like, it's you, man. And, like, I started to realize that doesn't mean to pick up my rifle and to charge out there because I ain't got shit. Like, I'm nothing. I'm a broken mind, broken emotions, broken everything. You know, and Kevin would tell me, he said, Dan, he said, that's when you're the most useful. That's when you're the best. That's when you're at your strongest. Look at Jesus, Dan. He spent his whole life on earth in total and utter and complete dependence upon God, the Father, for everything. He'd even, like, say, like, kind of apologetically almost, like, I can't help healing him on the Sabbath because my father's at work, and so when he's at work, I got to be at work, right? And so, like, that's what Kevin was saying. Like, just be. And, like, Stephanie still looks back to that time period where things were at the freaking worst and darkest, and she'd say, I felt so close to you, Dan. Like, I felt so, like, so close to you at that time. And like, I remember thinking, like, and I told her this, like, babe, if you see anything good in me, that's Christ. All the other shit, I'll totally own that. But, like, it's Christ. And, like, God used me to love her, and he saved my marriage, you know? And at this point, he won that battle. You know, and there's other battles, too, but I guess I wanted to leave you guys with a thought. Yeah, that was pretty recent, 2 years ago. I had to update my testimony. There's a quote I really like by this philosopher. Stephanie had shared this with me. I mean, I'm telling you, you talk about a warrior, man. My wife is a warrior. People are like, I don't know how he does that. Well, I don't do anything. You know, my wife, she, I can't even, man, like right now, she's at the battle with 7 kids at home, right? She's amazing. But anyway, so she shared this quote with me because she knew I'd like it. And I do. It's a philosopher from Ephesus, right? Like before Paul was there. Hercules, I don't know. I don't know how he uses highbrow words. But he says, out of every 100 men, he's referring to like people going off to war, this philosopher. He says, out of every 100 men, 10 shouldn't even be there. 80 are just targets. 9 are the real fighters. And we're lucky to have them, for they make the battle. Ah, but the one. The one is a warrior, and he will bring the others back. When I hear that, I say, damn right, that's freaking awesome. That's all I ever wanted to be. And like, I got all charged up when she told me this like a year or two ago when I was kind of having these revelations. And then like, you know how God, you know, it seems like truth, it comes by revelation, not by reason, which is really hard for guys like me to understand because I'm dependent upon him for even that. But like, it just like hit me all of a sudden. Like, I was thinking like, I'm the one, you know? And like, I'm going to bring my family back, you know? I'm going to do this, you know? Like, I got it, God, we're together. And then I realized, no. He's the one. Best case scenario, I'm a warrior. Best case scenario. But we all know I'm just a sham. You know, I'm going to tell you this in closing. I failed Ranger School. That's why I got out of the Army. I went to Ranger School the first time, failed land nav. I can't even find my way out of Walmart parking lot. So I freaking trained back up again, and I went to Ranger School like two weeks later. You know, I never quit. I went through Hell Week the first time, failed land navigation. Second time, I went all the way through phase 1 and 2, had 2 weeks left, and I got freaking peered out. Apparently because I'm an asshole, you know? And so, like, the reality is, like, I remember calling my dad on the phone, again, on the verge of tears, telling him about what had happened, about failing and stuff. When I was a kid, he used to tell me, Dan, if it is to be, it is up to me. Say it, son. He'd get down on my level like this, and he'd say, say it. If it is to be, it is up to me. And like, I'd repeat it back to him, like, yeah, if it is to be, it is up to me. And he'd say, no, Dan, say, if it is to be, it is up to me. If you met my dad, he's kind of a funny guy. And so, but like, it sunk into my psyche. And I think it made me part of who I am, being this driven person. For him, it was about supporting two boys after your wife died, you know? And for me, it was just about whatever it was about. But the fact of the matter is, what I realize, if it is to be, it's not up to me. It's up to him. You know, he's the one. And he's going to bring us back. And I'm just along for the ride. So, anyhow, that's it.
Take 10 minutes of a break here, and then we'll get back in here. Got coffee over there.